All right. Welcome, everyone. We're going to get started. My name is Tali Golan, and I'm the head of the TripAdvisor Charitable Foundation, the corporate philanthropic arm of TripAdvisor. I'm delighted to be here today with a packed house, no less, at the Mass Conference for Women, and to be your MC for this session. TripAdvisor is the world's largest travel site, enabling travelers to plan and book the perfect trip. We're thrilled to be here today to support the advancement of women leaders from across our community, and we're proud to support the state of Massachusetts, which we have called home for more than 16 years since our founder started the company above a pizza shop in Needham. TripAdvisor is honored to be a partner of the Mass Conference for Women. We are working hard to enable women in leadership roles by empowering them to impact their company, accelerate their career, and support each other in their journeys. We encourage you to visit our booth in the exhibit hall to learn more about our company, our culture, and about careers at TripAdvisor. I'm particularly thrilled to introduce Malika Chopra today, our speaker, to lead us in an engaging conversation on living with intent. Malika is going to share with us her personal journey to find more meaning, joy, and balance, and provide tangible examples of how we can all live purposeful and intentional lives. This is a relevant topic at any point as we all seek answers for how we can overcome the challenges we face daily. But this is an even more timely conversation these days as we pay attention to what's going on around us in our local society and our global community. And many of us, like myself, feel the weight of the world on our shoulders. Malika's work and approach embodies much of what we do at our foundation. Our aim is to empower and galvanize our TripAdvisor employees to find ways to make a positive difference in the lives of others, both individually and collectively. We know our employees find purpose in discovering the unique ways each of them can be a humanitarian, and we want them to be intentional about how they spend their time doing this. In particular, you may have heard of our recent commitment of more than $5 million in cash, in-kind support, and volunteerism to help address the global refugee crisis. We know that millions of people are searching for a new life, a second chance, with many of those displaced being women and children. They are on a journey, not by choice, like our travelers, but by necessity. And it's our collective duty to help them not only survive, but reach their full potential. And now I'm thrilled to pass the stage over to Malika Chopra. Malika is a mom, media entrepreneur, public speaker, and published author. Her most recent book, Living with Intent, My Somewhat Messy Journey to Purpose, Peace, and Joy, was published in April 2015. Malika will be in the exhibit hall immediately following the session signing copies of her book, so make sure to check her out there. And without further ado, please put your hands together and welcome Malika.
Good morning. How is everyone? I'm thrilled to be here. I was kind of surprised and humbled to see the audience. So thank you for being here. It's my fourth women's conference this year. I started in the Bay Area, went to Philadelphia, Austin, and now am here. And every single time I'm blown away by the women who come and then speaking to many afterwards about the experience that you all have here. And it's wonderful because you take a day, hopefully, to focus on yourself. So I'm going to talk about living with intention. And over the next hour, I will share some stories, and hopefully in my stories you hear your own story. And I really wanted to spend some time doing one, maybe two exercises, but also end with a meditation. So that's just to give you a sense. The goal is to kind of give you some practical tools as well. So I'm going to begin. The most common question I get asked is, what is it like being Deepak Chopra's daughter? So I figured, why don't I just address it up front, and then you don't have to ask me again later, or you're welcome to, of course. So I grew up actually here in Boston, grew up in Lincoln, Massachusetts. My parents came to this country when they were about 22, 23 years old for my dad to do his residency. They came to this country with $8 in their pocket. When they came here, they had never seen a color television. They bought their first book on credit, their first car on credit, which was an amazing experience for them. And my dad used to work 24 hours. You know, when he wasn't at the hospital, he was doing other rounds and night duty. And so my early memories in our family are actually of my dad not really around. My mom was a stay-at-home mom, and she was really the anchor for, you know, our nuclear family and extended family. And my dad, when he did come home, was basically really tired, really exhausted, and stressed. He was unhappy. In fact, my early childhood memories are often of my parents just fighting a lot, my dad drinking to get more relaxed, and my brother and I, frankly, not really liking it when he was around because my mom wasn't as happy. And when I was about 9 years old, something dramatically changed. So my dad came home one day and he just was different. And he had obviously been going through his own journey of self-exploration and had been walking here in Cambridge and walked by a meditation center. So in my family, even though they grew up in India, they were not very spiritual or religious focused. My family was a very Western focused family. So my grandfather was one of the first Western trained doctors out of India. My father and my uncle, who was at Harvard Medical School, were very focused on Western medicine and Western traditions. But my dad obviously felt that something was missing. So he walked into this meditation center as a pretty stressed out doctor who drank and smoked and just kind of wanted to escape from the world when he could. And he had his first experience with meditation. And for my father, that first experience was very dramatic. He, for the first time in his life, felt a sense of peace, of quiet, of connection, of knowing that he was something more than all the busyness and craziness of his life. So he came home that day, and he dragged my mother to the meditation center, and my mom learned how to meditate that day as well. And for my mom, who's not a very melodramatic person, it just felt like coming home. It was a very peaceful and lovely experience. The next day, I was 9. My brother was 6. My dad took us to learn how to meditate. The day after that, he made his brother and their whole family learn. Then my mom's sister, who's here, and their family, they had to learn how to meditate. And by the end of the week, the entire Indian community in Boston had been forced to meditate. So my dad, from the beginning, was one of those people who just kind of dragged everyone along for the ride. But for us, for my nuclear family, it was wonderful. It was a gift that was given to us because suddenly it went from my father being kind of this miserable person that we didn't want to be around to him being happier, to him coming home and looking at my brother and saying, oh, so what did you do in school today? He had never even asked us questions like that before. He took an interest and our family started spending more time together. And so for me, meditation truly is a wonderful gift. And that's why I feel very grateful that I can now go out and speak about some of the lessons I learned growing up. When my dad started speaking about the mind-body connection and meditation, it was, East Asian wisdom. He was a snake oil salesman. And now, of course, it's taught in corporations, hospitals, doctors are prescribing meditation, and the research is showing reams and reams of research, which is showing the benefits of these practices. So we know that they can really improve our lives. So that's a little bit about being a Chopra. My dad also used to make my brother and I be the guinea pigs of everything that he did. So whether it was learning memory tricks, doing hypnotizing me to get over my addiction to chocolate, which was a complete failure because I'm still totally addicted to chocolate as well, he used to just make us do lots of different things. But one of the things he taught us was about the power of intention. So after our meditations, he would make us repeat this phrase. And it says, I am responsible for what I see. I choose the feelings I experience and set the goals I will achieve. And everything that seems to happen to me, I ask for and receive as I have asked. So we'd meditate, we'd say this, and then he'd say, okay, what do you ask for? So as kids here in Boston, obviously, we would ask for tickets to the Celtics, the Red Sox. My brother's like an obsessive sports fan. We'd ask for tickets and a trip to Hawaii. We'd ask for new clothes and new Atari games, which shows how old I am. And my dad would listen patiently, and then he would say, okay, we'll work on all that stuff. But what about asking for love, connection, inspiration, a sense of purpose? And we were taught every day to ask for the qualities in our life that would make us happier, healthier, more connected, and of more purpose. So that's what an intent is. An intent, it comes from our soul. You know, our mind sets goals, and goals kind of have these end products. But intents come from the soul. They really represent who we aspire to be as individuals, as members of our families, of our societies, and as citizens of Mother Earth. And so I really do believe that when we set an intent, it's like planting a seed. You know, we plant a seed in the ground. We put the dirt on it. We let the water and the sun nurture it. And we don't know the beautiful blossom, actually, that it ultimately will become. We have a lot of trust that it will grow into something beautiful. And so intention is like that. We go to a deep place, and we'll do that today. We'll do a meditation today. But we go to a deep place, and we start asking ourselves questions. So we were taught to ask questions. Who am I? What do I want? How can I serve? We start to ask questions, and we don't necessarily even know the questions, the answers to the questions, when we start that journey, but we begin to listen, and we begin to listen to what are the qualities we want in our life. And then, you know, the universe kind of plays its game. We start meeting people and continuing on this journey. So that's a little bit about my background. But my book that I just recently came out with is called Living with Intent, but the subtitle is probably more important, which is My Somewhat Messy Journey to Purpose, Peace, and Joy. And so, you know, I have had a messy journey, which I imagine many of you have. You know, I grew up here in Boston, went to school in Rhode Island. And actually, my first job was working with Michael Jackson to launch his Heal the World Foundation. One of the benefits of growing up in the Chopra household is we met interesting people. And, you know, with Michael, it was interesting because, you know, he had his own journey. But what I realized growing up in our family was that most people came to a journey of self-exploration, often through some sort of trauma or some sort of pain. You know, they had been diagnosed with a disease, they were going through a divorce, they were miserable at work. And those were often the times that they began to ask themselves certain questions about what do I want in my life? Who am I? So I had this great experience. I worked with Michael. And then from there, I thought, okay, what's my dream job? And for me, my dream job was actually going to work for MTV. It was the coolest job on the planet at the time. It was not the typical Chopra job. But I got this opportunity where I joined MTV in New York in their international marketing department. And within 3 months, they were launching in Asia. So I convinced them that I was the person to go to India to launch MTV in India. I was 23 years old. And I said, you know, I know so many people. I know all about media. You know, I can speak Hindi. All of the above was untrue, actually. I just kind of was good at telling a story. And so I had this unique opportunity to go to India as the first person to launch the channel in India. And this was truly the dream job. I could get into any nightclub. I learned marketing and business sales and satellite distribution. I got to do videos for bands like No Doubt in the streets of Delhi. I actually met my husband at the first ever rave in New Delhi, a very non-Chopra-esque type of meeting. But we are actually celebrating our 20-year anniversary this year. So thank you. So, you know, I had kind of this dream job, falling in love, planning to get married, and everything was great. Then I had this one experience, which for me was one of the first transformational experiences on this messy journey. We had just sold our first ever sponsorship for the channel, It was a big deal because this was the first revenue-generating activity for the channel in India. And we were driving back from our corporate office in our nice air-conditioned car to our fancy five-star hotel in Bombay. Now, for those of you who may have been to India, especially 15 years ago, when you drove through the streets of Bombay, you had to drive through a lot of poor areas and slums. Now they have these flyovers, so most people don't need to see them anymore. But in those days, we had to drive through the slums. And the, you know, what happens in India and many of these places, to be honest, you start to become immune to the poverty. So we were driving, celebrating, maybe we had a bottle of champagne in our car, going back to our hotel, and we got stuck in traffic. Now, this is nothing unusual for India and many big cities. We just found ourselves like kind of at a crawling pace. But this time, we literally were not moving. It just, the traffic was not moving. And as we kind of inched along over the next hour, celebrating our success, we finally got to the area that was causing the traffic jam. And in this area, there was a group of children. We were in a slum. This was the poorest of the poor children. Children in ragged clothes, shoeless. You could see the malnutrition in their stomachs. But these children were all standing in the street, blocking the street, and they were mesmerized by something on the side of the road. So as we approached this roadside stall, we peeked in, and we saw that in the stall there was a television. And the television was hanging by wires, and in and out was flashing American kids grinding and dancing to hip-hop music on the beaches of Santa Monica, where actually I live now. And there was our company logo there as well. So everyone in my car began to cheer, because here was the second huge success of the day. We had reached every corner of the planet, literally. And while everyone in my car began to cheer, my heart stopped. And I thought, oh my God, what am I doing? What am I doing? You know, I had grown up in this family where I had always been asked, you know, what do you want? How can you serve? What's your purpose? And I realized while I had the dream job, literally, it wasn't the right path for me at that stage in my life. So I'm always incredibly grateful for that experience because it gave me a platform to be able to do many other things in my life. And often when young people come and ask me, like, you know, what should I do? I actually do strongly believe that it's great to have those experiences because they give you the tools to do greater things, actually, that you're meant to do. But for me, it was a transformational experience. And I remember sitting there and kind of my heart sinking and thinking, you know, I can't keep doing this. And so I, over the next month or so, transitioned out of that job. And I kind of was at that phase where I knew what I didn't, what I didn't want to do, but I honestly had no idea what I did want to do. And so that really kind of is the beginning of my journey. And, you know, I ended up going to business school. I've had many different ventures. I'm an entrepreneur by nature. So I'm always starting things. Almost all of them, like, fail all the time, but I'm always trying the next thing. And so, you know, life is kind of this journey. You start things, you explore, you kind of get back on track. And when I was 30 years old, I had a company that actually was a total failure. And a few months after that, 3 months after that, I discovered I was pregnant. And so I was 30 years old. And I was one of those people, I always wanted to have kids. I love children. And in many ways, you know, I never kind of found my voice before, but in becoming a mother, I suddenly felt a lot of confidence and clarity, and I was excited, and it was such a magical time in my life. And I was 5 months pregnant when the phone rang one morning, and on the other end of the line, actually my husband answered the phone, and on the other end of the line, it was my father. And my father was sobbing hysterically. My husband couldn't even understand what he was saying, so he gave me the phone, and my dad had told him to put on the television. It was the morning of 9/11, and the first plane had crashed into the first building, And as I was talking on the phone with my dad, who I couldn't understand, the second plane crashed. And so aside from just the horror of that morning, my father actually thought that my brother was on one of the planes. And so he was in a complete panic. My father had made an emergency landing on a flight that he was on. And it took us about an hour or so to be able to track my brother. In fact, my aunt, who's here, was calling taxis and trying to figure out where my brother had been dropped. And we finally kind of realized that he wasn't on one of the planes. And my mom was on a flight, and she had to turn around and go back to London. But that morning was obviously for everyone a very, very stressful morning. But we did have this moment of utter and complete and total panic. So I was 5 months pregnant. And I remember going for a walk 2 days later, still the stress of that day, and kind of we all were in a daze. And I ended up fainting while going for a walk. So ambulance came, I went to the emergency room, and basically just from stress, I had collapsed, and they were monitoring my baby to just make sure that she was okay. And I have to say, this was the first time in my life that those questions that I had been taught growing up had such deep impact on me. I really started to think about, who am I? Why am I bringing a child into this planet that's full of suffering and pain? And in many ways, like I mentioned before, how many people enter a journey of self-exploration because of difficulty, this really became my entryway into a true journey of self-exploration, to think about who I am, where I came from, what do I want, how can I serve? And for me, it was, how can I serve my children, you know, in a planet that is obviously suffering? And so that actually became my first book, which was called 100 Promises to My Baby. And it was basically looking at intention again, and how can we set intents as, for me, a mother, to serve myself and my children. And I really reflected deeply on my background for that. So again, I kind of felt like, you know, life's good. I had my kids. I was really happy, feeling really empowered in that kind of reconnection and that role I'm playing as a mom. And, you know, as I mentioned, I continued to kind of do my startup companies and write and consult with people, finding this balance or lack of balance between being a mom and my work. And life continues. So a few years ago, as part of my work, I was speaking to an audience, probably of about 50 women, teaching them about meditation, speaking about balance and mindfulness. And as I was talking to the audience, I found that I was having a parallel conversation in my head. So I was telling all of you about the benefits of meditation and being present, but I was thinking, oh my God, I just had that chocolate chip cookie and double macchiato before getting on stage. I have to go get the dry cleaning, pick up the dog food. I totally forgot about my daughter's permission slip for her field trip. And I was totally like over there, not over here. And I was so kind of hysterical in all the things that I wasn't doing in my life that I could find myself getting anxious. And so I kind of took a deep breath and I decided, you know, this is crazy. I'm being a total hypocrite. And so I decided to ask everyone in the audience to close their eyes and meditate so that I could deal with my own melodrama. It's a great trick. And so while everyone sat in the audience kind of happily meditating, I stood on stage and I thought, oh my God, my life is kind of a mess. You know, I am running around all day. I'm exhausted. My kids were about 10 and 8 at this time. So, you know, we had got over all the toddler kind of early years. But like my life was just kind of running around from one activity to another, you know, skipping the school, St. Patrick's Day lunch and feeling guilty about that because I was going to a meeting and then feeling like I'm letting my kids down. So I had all this guilt. I was tired. At the end of the day, I was so exhausted. But if you ask me, what did I do during the day? I really couldn't tell you, but I was tired and I was busy and I was, you know, just kind of on this hamster wheel, just kept going. But I had no idea why and no idea actually not feeling like I'm serving or living with intent. So I made a decision on stage that day a few years ago while everyone else was meditating that I was going to figure out what it meant to actually live with intent. And that really began kind of a new journey for me, which was really going back and looking at many of the life lessons I had learned. I had this opportunity, to go and talk to great teachers. So I kind of came up with a list of people that I really wanted to talk to. Eckhart Tolle, Marianne Williamson, Andrew Weil. In my head, I thought, okay, who's like one of my real heroes and mentors? And it was actually Carol Stern, who's the CEO of UNICEF, because I thought, look, here's someone who every single day is serving. And so I emailed her and I said, I'd love to come and interview you for my book and understand, you know, what does it mean to live with the sense of purpose? And so I prepared for that interview, flew to New York, and I'll never forget, I was sitting outside of her office, like nervous to go in and talk to one of my heroes. And when I got in and sat with her, I noticed she had a suitcase on the side of her desk and a pile of papers. And she was kind of freaking out because she was about to leave for somewhere in Africa. And her son, her middle school son, had forgot his homework. And so she was like texting her husband and trying to figure out, like before getting on this plane to go deal with a famine, dealing with her son. And I remember sitting there and thinking, oh my God, she's a mess just like me. It's great. And so part of my journey was going and really kind of connecting with people. And so what I'm going to do now is I'd like to just outline a little bit about the path that to intent, and actually do an exercise with you, because I think that often is the best way to kind of experience this. So quickly, the path to intent. I did it around the acronym INTENT. So again, just a tip for people who want to write. 7 spiritual laws, 4 agreements, numbers or acronyms work really well. So I is for incubate. So incubate is what I was talking about earlier. It's when we plant a seed, we actually plant it in a quiet place. And so for me, incubate is really honoring silence. It's honoring quieting our mind. It's honoring asking ourselves questions. For some people, it may not be meditation. Perhaps it's runs in parks or in the city. Perhaps it's a yoga class. Perhaps it's martial arts or dance. But I really encourage people to find that practice where you can feel silence. So even if you're going for runs, don't fill your head up with music. You know, we live in a culture where we're constantly stimulating ourselves. But there's a real beauty in silence, and out of silence comes creativity and insight, and tapping into our deepest, deepest desires. So, and I chose the word incubate because to me it really represented this idea of a seed. Even when we get pregnant, we don't just have a baby. It takes 9 months to incubate and to have a baby. And for intention is like that. It's not just something, it's not like another goal. Intention is really thinking deeply about what is it that I really want in my life. And we need to take time and silence for that. N is for notice. So another game that my dad used to make my brother and I play was something we called the 3 C's. And this was no criticizing, condemning, or complaining for 1 day. And I challenge all of you, when you get home tonight after you leave this wonderful conference, to try to spend 1 hour not criticizing, condemning, or complaining, either in your head or vocally. And what you find, and what we used to find, is how our internal dialogue really affects your external reality. So at this stage in my life, you know, my dialogue was, I'm overwhelmed, I'm exhausted, I'm tired, I have no time, and so that was actually what I was experiencing in my everyday reality as well. Noticing is also noticing the messages that our body is sending us. So I'm one of those people, I'm always on like the latest cleanse or juicing or, you know, always trying to lose weight. And I kind of made this shift where I decided, you know what, instead of obsessing over all of that, let me just notice what's happening in my body. And I noticed that, you know, I had a lot of body pain. And that body pain was when I ate certain foods, it would kind of swell up more. When I was really stressed, that it would swell up more. I started to notice, you know, what was happening in my stomach more, and inflammation. And so it was just that shift of noticing, and then I could kind of make changes more kind of that were natural rather than always forcing myself on the latest trendy diet. And notice is also noticing the people, the places, and the circumstances that we find ourselves in every day. So often, and I know this is like me, I am so focused on an end goal. And so I will do everything to get to that end goal. But I never take the time sometimes to notice what else is happening around me. So imagine entering a museum and you see this beautiful statue. And so you enter with a flashlight and you're just kind of focused on getting to that statue. But noticing is expanding the light. And as the flashlight kind of expands, you may notice that there's another beautiful painting here, or a sculpture, and something else that's going to kind of give you beauty. And until the light goes on and you see you're in this beautiful museum. But notice is noticing the person who's sitting next to you, having a conversation. And perhaps that person is a magical part of your journey, but you would have never noticed them before. Or noticing when, you know, the friend you've been thinking about for so long suddenly appears. Or noticing, like right now, when I just met a friend of mine from when I was in elementary school. So there's a meaningful connection that happens, and there's always the universe is giving us gifts to kind of help us on our journey. So I want to get now into an exercise that we'll do together. So when I started this journey, right after that, like the first weekend or so, I went home to meet my parents. And I took my kids there. We were spending the weekend there. And in our typical weekend getaways, my mom is cooking Indian food. My kids watch a movie. My husband goes for a run. My dad sits on the computer on Twitter. And so, you know, that was like our typical thing. And I decided that I would go and maybe ask my dad for some help. Now, you have to understand, in my family, when anyone needs help, we go to my mom. Nobody goes to my dad. The rest of the world may go to my dad, but we go to my mom. So this was an unusual thing for me to go and talk to my father. So my dad was sitting at the computer. And I went and sat next to him. I said, you know, Papa, I want to talk to you. You know, I've kind of been struggling a little bit. And so I could see my dad, like, stop typing, and he kind of looks confused at me. And I said, you know, I'm finding that I'm stressed. Like, I'm unhealthy. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm just running around. I think I'm unhappy. And I watched my dad. He kind of looked at me, and then there was utter panic in his eyes, and he started to look for my mother to come and deal with me. And then I was like, no, Papa, it's okay. I'm actually okay. But, you know, I'm looking for some help. And I literally watched my dad go from utter panicked dad mode to take a deep breath and go to Deepak Chopra mode and be like, oh, okay, we can handle this. And so he began to walk me through some of the work and the research of Dr. Dan Siegel, and really looking at what Dr. Siegel calls a healthy mind-body platter. So what are the different aspects that we need in our life to create great brain synergy and connection for a healthier and happier life? So once we looked at his work, then my dad and I came up with this exercise. And so that's what I'd like to do with you right now. I'd like you, if you don't mind, to put away your pads of paper, your phones, etc. And I'm actually going to just walk you through an exercise. So if you are comfortable, I'll first tell you what we're going to do. I'm going to have you sit comfortably, close your eyes, and I'm going to ask you a series of questions. When I ask you the question, I want you to feel the answer. So don't immediately go to intellectualizing and justifying the answer. Instead, be honest with yourself about how you feel with this answer. And there'll be different questions. For some people, it's helpful to think of it on a scale of 1 to 10. So 1 to 3 is I'm really struggling. 4 to 6 is, you know, I'm doing okay, I'm surviving. And 7 to 10 is I'm thriving in this area. And you may just want to kind of intuitively feel, am I on track with this or not? Okay? And the goal here is to really, what I realized in my life is that I was just kind of so overwhelmed, but I didn't even know where to begin. So let's try this exercise together. So sit comfortably. And if you are comfortable, close your eyes. And we just say close your eyes because it just kind of takes away another distraction. But if you prefer keeping your eyes open, that's fine. And I'd like you to take, just to begin, a deep breath in and out. And let's do one more breath in and out. So I'm going to begin asking about 10 questions, and I just want you to intuitively feel the answers. Am I struggling, surviving, or thriving in this area? First question, do I feel rested? Do I feel rested? Do I eat healthy, vibrant foods? Do I eat healthy, vibrant foods? Do I move enough? Do I move enough? Struggling, surviving, thriving. Do I have healthy relationships in my family? Do I have healthy relationships in my workplace and my community? Do I feel financially secure? Do I feel financially secure? Do I like what I do every day? Do I like what I do every day? Do I feel intellectually stimulated? Do I feel intellectually stimulated? Do I laugh? Do I laugh? Do I feel spiritually connected? Do I feel spiritually connected? And do I have a sense of purpose? Do I have a sense of purpose? So now take another deep breath in and out. And whenever you are ready, gently open your eyes. So this exercise turned out to be a very simple exercise, but very helpful for me. Because I realized I was just overwhelmed and I didn't even know where to begin. And so when I was able to kind of break down my life into different aspects and think about where I was struggling, I could set an intent that I was going to do something about it. And for me, you know, I found, of course, I'm always struggling with my sugar and diet and all that kind of stuff. But like I had good relationships, I was sleeping well, good in the career path, but I realized I had no intellectual stimulation. You know, I was at that point where I was running around all day, doing my kids' stuff, had plenty of time to go on Facebook and see what everyone else was doing in their lives, but not enough time to like read a book or do other things. And it was books and poetry and things like that that had always fed my soul. I had stopped doing that. I didn't laugh or play anymore. I was too busy. Like, I wasn't having fun anymore in my life. And also, you know, I was struggling with that sense of purpose. And so what this allowed me to do is actually just kind of start making small shifts and what I call micro intents. We don't have to, like, change our whole life, but sometimes we can set an intent just for one thing. Choose one thing out of that exercise that we did, one area that perhaps you were struggling in or didn't feel like you're thriving in, and decide, for now, I'm just going to focus on that one thing. And you can start making small shifts for that ultimately have bigger impact. So the next T is for trust. And trust is a very difficult one actually for me. Trust is that when you're asking yourself, what do I want? That you trust your intuition and you trust the answers. So I'm one of those people, I'm constantly on the road, ambitious, trying to do a book, speak. But if I ask myself, what do I really want? Right now at this stage of my life, it's connection with my children. It's connection with my family. It's the joy that comes from there. And so I'm always kind of doing this balance between both things. But if I trust that answer and that intuition, that actually helps guide me in the decisions that I'm making. Trust is also trusting the universe, that the universe is there to support you, that other people are there to support you. Know, as women, we often need help, but we don't ask for it. We're scared to ask. Trust is trusting that when we do ask others for help, they are there to support us. When I launched my website, intent.com, and people started sharing their intents, what we found the most engagement and activity was in the support feature. People love to support one another, but you need to kind of first ask for it. E is for express. I believe so strongly about this, as that's what my platform is. People are stating their intents. Because I think when you state what you want, you create a ritual by which you say, this is important to me. I am going to take ownership of this. I am going to ask people to support me. I don't think you have to, like, make your intents public or put them on a social media platform, but say them to yourself. Create the ritual of writing down what you want. And for some people, that actually by itself has a lot of fear in it. And so writing it out and that ritual is really like that step of planting the seed and saying, this is what I want. So we're not going to have time to go through this exercise, but another exercise that I have in the book and that is helpful sometimes to really kind of think about how do we take intention to action is another exercise that actually my dad did share with me. It's a simple mind map. And what you do is in the middle, you just say, what makes me happy? I realized at 40, I didn't really know what made me happy anymore. You know, again, at 30 I knew, but like it was a time to kind of rethink about what makes me happy. And the more random you can fill these bubbles, the better. So for me, it was like good books, good literature, travel, good food, my family, you know, speaking. And so the exercise here is just, again, take a moment, be quiet, think about what makes me happy, and just start writing those answers. And we'll come back to what it means to take action in the next step. So nurture is the next N. And this is probably was my favorite chapter when I wrote my book. Nurture is about self-care. It's about letting go of guilt, something very hard for women to do. It's about asking for help. But for this chapter of the book, and my aunt will appreciate this, you know, we take turns going to India to be with my grandparents. And so a few years ago, I had an opportunity to go and stay with my grandmother and grandfather in Delhi. And so my, you know, there's lots of logistics. My mom has to come take care of my kids, and I went. And so going to India, I thought, oh, look at me. I'm such a good granddaughter going to take care of my grandparents and kind of went with all this self-importance. And I got to Delhi, and the first night I was in Delhi, I went to sleep and, you know, the fan was on. I woke up an hour later and the air conditioning now was on, the fan was off, and I had a blanket on me. The next time I woke up, the air conditioning was off, the blanket was off, and there was a glass of water next to my bed. The next time I woke up, you know, again, there was a sheet there. And all night long, my grandmother had been coming to my room to make sure that I was comfortable and okay. And then in the morning, my grandfather came with his newspaper and tea. And we went outside and we sat and we talked. And then we went for a walk in the park. And I had 1 week in Delhi where my grandparents just took care of me. And I felt so nurtured. And I was like, who gets this anymore? Like at 40, we don't get that. We're taking care of everybody else. And my grandparents just reminded me the beauty of being cared for, and self-care too, because of course when I came back home, it all went back to normal, but I was able to carry that with me, and that was a great gift. So nurture is about self-care, and that's what a day like today is, but finding moments throughout our days and our weeks, and it doesn't have to be, again, dramatic changes, but honoring the need to nurture. And the final T is for take action. So I grew up in the self-help world, which was all like, oh, set your intent and the universe will take care of the details. I actually don't necessarily believe that. I believe that there is a time for smart goals and there is a time for setting goals. But when we do all this other stuff and we set our intents from a place of heart-centeredness, and nurture and notice and do all the other stuff, taking action becomes much easier. So going back to that mind map, these were the things for me that kind of make me happy. But then the next step of taking action is start linking the bubbles. And you come up with great ideas. So I linked intellectual stimulation with friends. And I started a book club with my friends. It's not rocket science. It was the easiest thing to do. We meet every 6 weeks or so. Nobody's ever read the book, but we get together and we have a bottle of wine and we chat about our kids. And it's like this amazing thing. And once in a while we read the book and we have a good conversation where we feel like, you know, we're intellectually connected. I connected family, travel, and good food. And so my husband and I came up with the idea, let's go to Vancouver and eat at our favorite Indian restaurant. And so you can start to kind of come up with simple ideas to just bring more happiness into your life. Like, again, these aren't life-changing things, but these small kind of things start to bring more happiness into your life. So what I'd like to do now in the remaining minutes is actually guide you in a meditation, and then I'll end with a story. So once again, I feel like kind of practically having the experience brings this more to life. And this is going to be a really simple and short meditation, but it's a meditation that you can do anywhere, anytime. So we're going to use sound. A primordial sound is like a sound of nature. Think of the waves of the water or the wind blowing through the trees. There's sounds that just feel good. So for this meditation, we're actually going to use the words I am. I, the letter I, am, A-M. And I'll tell you first what we're going to do. We're going to close our eyes, repeat the words I am. And whenever your attention drifts away from the words I am, which it will, which is completely normal and natural. You'll start thinking, I'm hungry, I should have gone to the bathroom, how long is this going to go? As soon as you notice that it's wandered away, just come back to the words, I am. And so this meditation is also just a flow between a calming sound, which helps settle your mind, thoughts, sensations, feelings, images. Some of you may fall asleep. Notice why you're falling asleep. Basically, your body is saying, I'm really tired, and I finally have this moment, and I'm going to fall asleep. And so that's also something that you need to notice. And so in this meditation, we're just going to take a minute to get silent. And then I'm going to ask you 4 questions again. Once again, I just want you to experience the answers. No need to intellectually answer the questions. Just experience the answers. Okay? So once again, sit comfortably. And we'll just begin. Close your eyes and take a deep breath in and out. And I want you to mentally repeat the words in your head. I am. I am. Don't worry about a particular rhythm or pace, whatever comes naturally. I am. And when your attention drifts away from the words, which it will and is completely natural, just come back to I am. So we'll just sit quietly for a minute or so. keeping your eyes closed, you can stop repeating the words. And with your eyes closed, let's just take a deep breath in and out. I'm going to now ask 4 questions. When I ask the question, just experience the answers. Whatever comes up, listen and let it go. Who am I? Who am I? What do I want? What do I want? How can I serve? But let's begin with, how can I serve myself? And now, how can I serve my world? Now shift your attention to your heart, and I just want you to think about, what am I grateful for today? What am I grateful for today? And now with the next breath, in and out, just let go of whatever may have come up. So in and out. And whenever you are ready, gently open your eyes. So again, finding quiet time to ask ourselves questions. And sometimes, and I know this happens to me many times, I don't know the answers. But in asking the question, we start to learn to listen. So this is a great quote from the Upanishads. It says, you are what your deepest desire is. As is your desire, so is your intent. As is your intent, so is your will, what you're determined to do. As is your will, so is your deed, your actions, and as is your deed, so is your destiny. So what I'd like to do is I'm going to end with a story quickly, we may not have time for Q&A, but this is a story that I told as a TEDx talk about a year ago or 2 years ago, it's kind of epitomizes my journey of intent. So I had come up, like I said, with a list of people I wanted to interview for my book. And at the top of the list was Eckhart Tolle. And some of you may be familiar with him. He wrote a book called The Power of Now. Oprah is a big fan of his, so she promotes him a lot. He seemed like a great teacher. And I thought, you know, I really want to go talk to him to understand about intention and purpose and, you know, what we're destined to do in our lives. And so I emailed his office, and they finally emailed me back, and they said, you know, he really doesn't do many interviews, but because he's a big fan of your father's, he'd love to meet with you, so can we find a time in February? I had emailed in June, so they said February, so I had like 9 months or however long to prepare for this interview. So in that time, I read all his books, I watched all his YouTube videos, you know, I know everything there is to know about Eckhart Tolle because I had prepared so much for this interview. And finally, the February morning came that I was going to go and interview him. So I live in LA, and I was going to meet him in San Francisco, and I had booked an early morning flight to get there early. And when I woke up that morning, I found that I had the worst allergies I've had in my life. Like, I was sneezing nonstop, my eyes were watery, my throat was scratchy, and I kind of had this moment of, like, I'm going to just sneeze all over Eckhart Tolle. This is going to be a disaster, and maybe I should just cancel the meeting. But it had taken 9 months to get it, so I decided, you know what, I'm just going to stuff myself with cold medicine and drink a lot of coffee and just go to San Francisco. So I picked up the phone on my bedside table, and there was a text message from my father. And it said, good luck with the interview. Remember, he is always in the now. So I read this text message. I was like, what the hell is my dad talking about? But whatever. So I went and I got ready. Went to the airport, and when I landed in San Francisco, there was another message from my dad, in the now with a smiley face. So I was like, okay. Went to San Francisco, to the hotel, met Eckhart's assistant in the lobby, and he was really sweet and gracious. And he said, thank you so much for coming. Eckhart's really excited to meet with you. He loves the concept of intent. I just have to tell you, his schedule is really busy, so you're going to have 15 minutes, and I'll just take you up. You ask your questions, and then I'll come after 15 minutes. You just get up and leave. So as he said this to me, I started to panic because I had been preparing for 9 months for this interview. I had 10 questions. I was so organized, and suddenly I started to think, in 15 minutes, what am I going to ask him? Like, this is going to be a total disaster. And so I found that my heart was beating fast. My hands started to sweat, but I was like, oh, thank you so much. That's so nice. And we got in the elevator, and as we were going up the elevator, my phone pinged again, and it was my dad in the now, and I was like, oh my God, be quiet. And I put my phone off. And we got to the hotel room, knocked on the door, and, you know, I was kind of in this panicked state already before even meeting him. And when Eckhart opened the door, he was so sweet. He had this beautiful presence. He reminded me of my grandfather, Daddy. And suddenly, I felt really calm. And so we sat together, and I put my phone next to me to check the time. And, you know, I told him, you know, I'm working on this book. I'm trying to understand intention and purpose, and he listened, and it was 2-3 minutes into the conversation with the intros and whatnot, and then he said, you know, intention is the most powerful force in the universe. So I took my pen and my piece of paper, and leaning forward to have the secrets of the universe revealed to me, and then he stopped, and I was like, and then he said, do you hear those bells? So I was like, what? And so then I listened, and I heard bells in the distance. So I was like, yeah, I hear those bells. And he said, then he began to tell me a story about when he was a kid in Germany. He used to work near a church, and these bells rang, and they reminded him of his childhood. And so I was smiling, listening, but I'm thinking, I don't care about the bells. Like, I need to know about intent. What are you doing? And so we were like 5-6 minutes into this interview now. And then he said, you know what? Let's listen to the bells. So I was like, okay. And so we sat there, and these bells were ringing. And he had this beautiful smile, like peaceful smile on his face, obviously reminiscing about something. And I was sitting there kind of smiling, but again, the heart beating, the hands sweating, 7-8 minutes. I'm thinking, oh my God, this is a total disaster. Like, my entire book, I'm like anticipating all the drama with my editors. And he's just sitting there listening to the bells. And I remember very specifically at about 10 minutes, 11 minutes, it must have been noon because the damn bells would not stop ringing. I finally let go, and I took a deep breath, and I said, you know what? I gotta just listen to the bells. And I shifted from this panicked mode to feeling really peaceful and happy and centered and intentional. And I just sat and I listened to the bells with Eckhart Tolle. And before I knew it, there was a knock on the door. It was his assistant, and my time was up. Hadn't even asked one question. And I got up to leave, but I was happy. And Eckhart said, you know what, sit down. We haven't even started yet. And he spent an hour and a half then with me, speaking about intention and purpose and how we can serve. And at one point in the conversation, I said to him, I said, you know, I grew up in this environment where I was asked every day, how do I serve? What's my unique purpose? And I said, I don't know. I have no idea. I'm a soccer mom. Like, I drive my kids from one class to the next activity, and on the side, I try to do things like on the side. But that's what I do. I'm just a soccer mom. And so I want to leave this with you, which is what he answered me. And he said, you know, it is the everyday people who are doing extraordinary things. And they are the people that are raising the frequency of this planet. So never underestimate what you are doing being a soccer mom. But when you are doing that, do it with love. Do it with passion. Do it with purpose. And then you will be living with intent. So thank you very much. And I hope you have a great day. Thank you.